Welcome. No matter when you're watching this, no matter what day and time it is, it's Valentine's Day when I'm recording this. And so our message today is about serving every student. And this is the first in a series I'm going to do on cultivating meaningful relationships because February is the love month. And cultivating meaningful relationships, totally central to my mission in helping teachers because it was the biggest, most wonderful surprise benefit of switching to student-centered instructional strategies. So if you're here to learn more about diversity, but through a different lens, through the lens of none of that stuff matters, every student is who we want to reach and speak to and see, stay tuned. You're looking to change things up in your classroom. You'd like to see more student participation and interest, or you really need a better way to tap into each student's individual abilities. Maybe you're happy with everything in your classroom and you're just that teacher who will stop at nothing to provide the very best opportunities for your students so you're always open to hear more good news. Well, let me personally welcome you to the Student-Centered Science Teacher Podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Carosis. I'm a secondary science teacher with 11 years experience teaching at-risk students in a distance learning cyber model. And yet, I've realized success in my efforts to plan for and execute student-centered learning. See, I believe that a science teacher's job goes beyond transferring specific content knowledge. Rather, I believe our duty is to prepare students for life beyond our walls, to help develop them into informed, active members of society who can confidently make all kinds of decisions. So on this podcast, our discussions will focus on strategies to promote active learning in the classroom and their outcomes, as well as creating and nurturing a culture that enables students to take ownership of their learning by planning next steps and implementing our feedback. Here, we believe that our classrooms are learning laboratories, not just for students, but also for teachers. You'll always get encouragement to keep on experimenting because what you do and how you do it matters. Let's jump into today's topic. Tell you a little bit about myself if you're new here. I'm gonna make this quick because I think we have the same people viewing all the time for the most part. I live right now to inspire and support other science teachers because it's just a call in my heart. I want to reignite their fire for teaching science. I think over time that fire can dwindle someone or something or many things, suffocate it. As a chemistry teacher, I'm going to say we just cut off its oxygen, right? The fire ends up smoldering instead of blazing, and I want to make it blaze again. But part of that is being able to also nurture lasting relationships with our students. That's probably why you became a teacher. So I focus on teachers reflecting to see what they could learn about their own students, their own school, their own practice, and then how student-centered instructional strategies fit into that practice or could augment that practice. And then where I really shine, I think, is my ability to design and deliver and teach others how to design and deliver interactive science lessons that make the whole thing just go more smoothly. My experience is varied. I had 7 years in the lab before I even decided to become a teacher. I have a master's in chemistry. I have a master's in education. I worked 13 years teaching chemistry in an online cyber school in Pennsylvania. Lots of at-risk youth, talking teenagers there. Of course, a great deal of that time was spent lecturing, talking at my students, teaching is telling. Guess what? I don't have to tell you, it doesn't work. It doesn't work for achievement. It doesn't work for engagement. So I switched to student-centered learning and I'll never turn back. In fact, I'm so invested in this that I've created multiple membership products for teachers to be a part of, from free through very super low commitment, $7, through totally committed complete overhaul of your classroom, instructional design suggestions in the comments. I think they're in the comments in the description below if you want to learn more. Whether you are listening by podcast or you are watching by YouTube or you are in my free group, the Student Centered Science Teacher Society. With that, let's keep moving on. Today we're talking about serving every student. And where I want to start with this is the fact that this whole lesson I'm about to teach you, this whole idea, is not something I knew. It's one of those things I wish I knew, that someone could have advised me or articulated, but unfortunately, we just don't focus on this in education. There is so much in the day-to-day that it often gets overlooked by other teachers as well as our administrators and our support personnel. So what I have here on the screen, if you're watching, is a snapshot from another teacher. So at my school, we have sort of a pseudo homeroom we call advisory. So we share each other's students, and once a month we meet with them, we talk to them. And this student said, "I was an amazing teacher who really cares about her students." And she told this to another teacher. And of course, this other teacher's on the science staff at my school, so he shared it with me, which is super kind. You know, these are the statements that through the last 3 to 4 years that I've been using these strategies, I kind of scratched my head. Students super generalize what they see and experience when they articulate it, when they explain it. They use the word care. And for a long time, I wondered, how can they see my care? I mean, that's wonderful. I love it. But remember, I'm in cyber school. And I think that is the most powerful aspect of everything I have to teach you. That you do not have to be face-to-face with your students. You do not have to have that visual body language even going on to know that someone cares. And so when I really thought about this, how do they get this idea? I love that they know that I care about them because I do. I'm totally invested in their success. But how do they know? How, apart from me saying I care about you, which is not something I do. I do not say that. How do they get this? And so that's what I want to bring you here today in this message. I want to, as one of the overarching statements, I want to say this is a fact. This is not an opinion. We don't consider enough how students take in the world around them, in my opinion. I certainly didn't anyway. Students observe, they comprehend, and they make inferences about all kinds of nonverbal cues. Do you get that? It's science. They observe, they comprehend, and they make inferences. They make judgments. They make decisions. They draw conclusions about what they see and what they experience. Some things, not a comprehensive list, just what I could sort of conjure up. How we dress. This is something that's come up in my classroom recently because teachers are starting to use the webcams more and more and readying themselves apparently less and less when they wake up in the morning. And recently my students told me how it projects, obviously, you probably know this, an image of professionalism that you care about yourself, the way you dress, naturally. How organized or prepared we appear. They know. We cannot imagine that they don't know if we just slap together our lesson in 5 hot minutes before class. Because we're going to lean on our teaching, teaching is telling a lot in that case. They're going to realize, they know when we have a bad day. Let's put it that way, right? If we are just all kerfuffled and chicken with its head cut off kind of affect, they know that, right? But if we are that every day, that's going to speak some loudly and clearly about our professionalism, about our competence, about our ability to support them, all the things, right? So far, these two bullet points are about appearance and how it appears. Well, that's the message here. So if you're going, well, you know, this is a lot of superficial judgment. This is reality. We are adults. We're supposed to model everything for our students. It's do what I do and what I say, not just what I say, right? So how we spend our time during class might be something that students are forming an opinion about when they are thinking about, does a teacher care about me or don't they? Are they spending time in the hallway with the other teachers? Are they spending time exclusively with one or two or three students all the time? Are they only ever calling on one or two or three students? Are they circulating the room and talking to everybody? Are they helping students work through, or are they saying, you do it all, test on Friday? How we spend our time, how we organize and prepare, how we dress, these are all reflections of our decisions. And then how we use our time between classes or after class as well. A student's not going to ask you for help during their study hall if they know that you have been ranting and raving about how you have no personal time and, you know, whatever the case might be. Or you, like, again, you're maybe take a walk on your prep period, which is totally okay, I'm sure, in your contract or your whatever. But do you make yourself available to them? This idea of, does a teacher care about me, is what we're trying to connect here. And I don't want to get that lost for anybody who's not watching this as a video. Students see, they comprehend, they make some conclusions about this. And so I'm just going to sort of put out there, and what I want to ask you is, do you think they see you as an authority figure? Or do you think they see you as a mentor? Now, if you're watching the video, you can see the picture here is very clearly. But if you're listening by podcast, what I've got here is a picture of a woman, hands crossed, with her dry erase marker in hand. Yep, I just did that kind of sense. And then in the other picture, a woman next to a student looking at the computer, actively pointing at the computer. The student is looking attentively. They are side by side. I don't need to explain why I've labeled them authority and mentor. My question to you as a reflective point is, where do you fall? What do you look like when the students see you? And so what I'm going to suggest to you is that all of that unspoken nonverbal stuff matters. And what if we all approach teaching as though we need to earn the mutual trust and respect of students instead of demanding it? Short, quick, true story. When I started teaching, when I started parenting, when I even became a dog mom, okay, have a fur baby, I was raised with the notion that elders are to be respected, they are to be revered, they are authority. I do what they say. And I'm pretty compliant in that, even to this day. And I approached my classroom, my children, my doggy, sort of similar. Why do I have to do this? Actually, that's a lie. I try to explain myself all the time. It doesn't work. As a parenting strategy, by the way, yeah. But this is not the parenting podcast because I can't speak with authority there. But yeah, to put yourself back in that servant leader mentality, that you can't expect authority to be just... when you get your teaching certification, it isn't an award that says you're in charge of everything all the time and everyone must comply. You are not a general in the military. You're not. You're someone responsible for teaching and guiding human beings who have hearts and all sorts of other bodies besides physical ones. Emotional, mental, spiritual. There's a lot that goes into this, right? Gaining and earning trust instead of demanding it. And again, for those listening by podcast, the visual I have here has trust as a word in the center, and then there's a whole lot of other words around it, a whole cycle that involves and creates trust. And some of the words include integrity, sincerity, competence, consistency, commitment, and reliability. And of course, this is not a whole collection. collection of the traits or the features that lead to trust, but it's a small sample and I thought it was pretty great for illustrative purposes. I've put a star next to competence, consistency, commitment, and reliability because I believe our lesson plan preparation can clearly demonstrate these things. As I said, as a teacher in the classroom, this whole my teacher cares about me came from me adopting student-centered instructional strategies, and that happened as a consequence of me renovating my lesson plans. Complete makeover, 180. So what is it about the lesson plan that can demonstrate competence, consistency, commitment, and reliability? Well, I've got pictured here, again, if you're listening in instead of watching, that daily active learning lesson plan that I freely share to anyone who is interested, wants it, needs it, it wants to try it out. You know, it's got five different elements. We've got objectives and a warm-up, an actual learning activity, data analysis, and practice. And I think every single aspect of this can speak to one of those elements that leads to trust. For example, our objectives and the way we express them, or if we even express them, provide clarity to students, which if you study and find the research on, clarity has an enormous impact on student learning. But also, if you're clear about what you want them to do and be and see and all of that, it's likely that they're going to buy in a little bit better. Leads to trust. Reliability can come from your warm-up activity. And the way I teach a warm-up activity, it's not just going to activate prior knowledge, but it's going to integrate prior knowledge. It's going to prove to students that they know more than they think they know, and that what they know can be used in other contexts when we're integrating it. And so in the sense of what we need, Marina's reliability, she said we're going to do this, and look, I was able to do it. Oh, even going backward, even using it as a spiraling opportunity to pull back on something students were introduced to, or even a life experience. Even a life experience. It tells the students, she understands something about me and maybe what I've encountered. I don't think this is a stretch. I think this is a real psychology. When we get to the student-centered learning activity, I'm going to tell you this reads competence and commitment. Because the learning activity is not just, here, go do this thing. When you're structuring a great learning activity, you are preparing thorough, detailed task instructions. You've shown the students that you've sought out an interesting, engaging, hopefully really cool manipulative process or technology for them to work with. It didn't just poof come to you. It's not part of your textbook. It took you some doing to get that. And you are tying it and pulling out from it. You're creating an artifact to align with it so that they know how to complete these instructions and work with the tool in a way that exposes and uncovers those core ideas, and at the same time allows them to practice the cross-cutting concepts of science as outlined in the NGSS or any other three-dimensional standard where they are identifying patterns, focusing on cause and effect, making inferences abundantly. They know, teenagers anyway, okay, your middle school students I think will even get this, they know that's not a small task. They know their other teachers aren't doing it. And it's going to speak volumes about what you're putting in to get out amazing outcomes with and from them. Data analysis, reliability comes back into play. Oh, she said I was going to learn to analyze data. She said I'd learn to think through this. And look, I did. And look, she structured this activity in a way that I could easily see the patterns, that I could easily see all the things and learn from this activity that she didn't have to explicitly tell me. It's reading reliability, confidence, competence, and commitment. And then finally, the skill practice set at the end, I think, is showing our integrity. At the end of this lesson, can they do what we said they need to do and what they would learn to do? I have strongly believed, as a professional in the public service realm, and I compare myself to other public service entities, police officers, firefighters, EMS personnel, doctors and lawyers, you know, when they, not so much the lawyers, so kind of a, right, not super public service, but the police are supposed to keep us safe. The firemen are supposed to put out the fire so our house doesn't burn down. The EMS might bring us back to life. When they do what they say we're going to do, we see this, right? We see it. We know the stories. We hear from people. We believe it. We trust it. When it comes time for us to need that, it will happen. And the opposite is true. The opposite is true. And we've seen that in the news as well. When people abuse their positions of power, we learn that maybe all the trust doesn't belong to them. And so that's where I'm saying it can go either way. As a cyber school teacher, I am an option. My school is an option for students who feel that they have been abused and uncared for in a conventional, traditional environment. And part of the reason this is a focus for me in this teaching series is because there's far too many students who report that. You aren't interested in that. That's why you're listening. I don't need to convince you to love on your students, but I need to get the message out there. I think we all need to. And so how do we love on our students without like loving our students? Because that's not allowed. I'm unabashedly a Christian. If you don't want to hear about the Bible, you can just shut me off right now. But I'm going to go ahead and on this Valentine's Day, I'm going to cite Corinthians 13:4. The love is verses 13:4 through 7, in fact. Love is patient. Okay. If you're watching by video, you get the visual here. But if you're listening by podcast, maybe you don't see it as much. And then go back to that authority and mentor idea. What does an authority figure look like in the front of the room as a teacher? And what does a mentor teacher look like? How is that different? And where does patience fit in? I personally believe that patience is the first part listed in this verse because it might be the hardest thing to achieve. But also, if we don't have that, we can't do any of the other things that come after it. So in a classroom, when we're showing patience with our students, we're adopting that mentor mindset. That servant leader. Love is kind. It should go without saying, but yes, every teacher should be kind to students, parents, families, and other staff as well. Love does not boast. It's not going to brag. It's not going to say, this is easy. You should know how to do this. That's what an authority does, not a mentor. A mentor is going to get you there. Love is not proud. Kind of same thing as boasting, right? It's not going to say, I'm better than you. I can do this. Why can't you do this? Love does not dishonor others. We should never, ever be singling out students for what they cannot do. Even in our best attempts, you know, I've seen teachers do grouping strategies and all the students who are struggling are put together and everybody in the class knows it and they see that. It's a way of dishonoring. Authority figures also, their whole body language kind of says, I'm great, you're not. Love is not self-seeking. We're not out there for us at all. I love this statement because it defines student-centered learning. It's all about the students. If you want to sort out what should I be doing in this moment more student-centeredly, you're saying, what can I better do for them? How is this what I'm doing about them? And if you can answer that, then you're on the right path. If you can find that it's all about you, then maybe you need to make some change. Love is not easily angered. this is something I had trouble with, but it came along with my patience, right? So if I wasn't patient, I was getting easily angered and I was acting proud. When we feel that tinge of frustration, someone's just not doing the thing, they're not cooperating, they're not complying, they're not where we think they should be, it's easy to get angry. And we can show love and care by not getting angry. Love also keeps no record of wrongs. Yes, as teachers, we need to keep data. We need to follow patterns of student behavior and student data, but we can't hold it against anybody. We need to believe that everyone can improve, that everyone can do it. We need to believe in the growth mindset that we preach and that we try to teach. Love rejoices with truth. Enough said. I'm just going to say to you, be real. Parts of this job I feel are highly about performing. But ultimately, the more real you are, the better you're going to connect. The better students are going to think you care. Love always protects. I want you to remember that these parents, no matter the age of the student you teach, these parents are entrusting you with their most prized possession. Most of the time they are their most prized possession. And, you know, we're not talking about protection necessarily in those very unfortunate circumstances where we have like active shooter situations. I'm talking on the everyday. Protect them from themselves. Protect them from their negative voices, from their self-sabotage, from one another and their nasty words. Love always trusts. So again, I'm going to say trust the process. If you've got a good process in place for planning your lessons, for being student-centered, that student-centered mentor teacher, trust the process. It will all iron out, I promise you. Love always hopes. Kind of enough said there. We can't give up. Can't give up on ourselves. We can't give up on our students, on their families. We can't give up on education as a whole. We can't give up. We are always needed. And I hope you will always be there to do it. And that you are not a teacher who will fall away from this profession. It needs you. Love always perseveres. And if we're going to be caring, if we're going to show our care, we're going to show that we're not giving up. We're going to be there. Within reason, okay? You don't always need to give up your lunch period, your prep period, your this and your that. But it's about sending the message. Of course, you need to follow through. They need to feel the real. They just can't give up. And so I'm going to end here with the same sentiment that I started with. Students see your care through your actions and sometimes your absence of action. They translate all they see and do and be into caring or not caring. And we might be the only model that is able to teach them without words how to do and be the same. To be a caring person and to be a servant to others. Now, this session will connect in the future to another video I plan called Knowing Every Student, where we dive a little bit deeper into the data of it all so that when we're serving every student with all of those characteristics and features and approaches, we're doing so in a targeted way so that everybody gets what they need. Until then, please join us in the Student-Centered Science Teacher Society. Grab the 3-step action plan for making the switch to student-centered instructional strategies. This forms the basis for the Active Learning Laboratory. We'd love to have you there, $7 a month. Meanwhile, if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe, like, share. If you're listening on the podcast, please do the same. Follow us, share with a friend. Visit our free community at community.labineverylesson.com. And I will see you again very, very soon. Thanks for joining.